This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. All right, welcome back to the spring sessions of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and involved in these spring sessions is my man, Pierce Nellis from the Wisconsin Sportsman podcast. Dude, how you been?
Pretty good, man. Coming off of a long string of guide days here, but today's my first day back in the office, so I'm kind of recouping a little bit. Had some interesting days.
Fish were the fish biting? Week. That's what I want to know.
Biting out of their damn minds. Yes. Okay. That's a good fishing thing. Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Okay. I had, you know, one of the biggest strings of, like, this was the best, worst day of my life on Saturday. The best part of it was hugely in part to the folks I was fishing with. Awesome individuals. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Adam and Greg for just an awesome day. But dude, so you know how some days you like start off and you know you have a minor inconvenience, but it's like whatever, I can overcome that. So I get up early. I go to get, you know, gather my stuff, fill up the Yeti, all that sort of stuff. I realized the night before I forgot to close the lid on the coffee maker, right? So no coffee brewing. I'm about to leave in like 5 minutes. I'm like, well, that sucks. Whatever. We'll make a quick trip stop. That's fine. We can rebound from here. Mm-hmm. 10 minutes out the door, going down the highway, rolling about 75 miles an hour. I see a turkey on the right shoulder of the road. Mm-hmm. And so I think, nice. I'm going to get over in the left lane so that I don't smoke this bird.
Yeah.
And as I move over to the left lane, this turkey decides to run right back across the road and just gets eaten by my Jeep.
Okay.
Now, I was expecting, like, I was able to keep driving. This bird just gets smoked, goes flying into the median. I knew it wasn't good. You know, you can't hit a 20-pound animal that fast at that height and not get some damage. But I was like, you know what? No lights went off. I didn't hear anything. I'm running late anyways. Like, as long as this thing keeps rolling, we're just going to keep on going. I will deal with it when I get back.
Yeah.
You know, when I get there, because it'll be fine. So get there. I look at it, like, everything looks pretty good. I hear like this weird, soft kind of like a hissing sound from the front end, and cosmetically everything's fine, but the grill it's a little loose.
Mm-hmm.
If I look behind the bumper, there's a bit of debris. there's a bunch of feathers wedged in there. I'm like, that isn't good, but you know what? This old girl's got 291,000 miles on it. So it was bound to happen at some point. If this doesn't kill it, then something else will very soon. So I pick up the clients and we're going down there, split these guys up. First guy gets a bunch of fish, like right in the first spot. I'm like, all right, I'm going to go grab Greg. I'm going to run down, bump him up. We're going to leapfrog you, all that. I grab Greg, cross through the shallow section. I step into kind of a muddy, silty, kind of sticky, mucky spot. Mm-hmm. And I go to pull my foot out and I rip the sole off the bottom of my wading boot. And so I'm like, son of a bitch. Like, all right, that's pretty annoying again. Like,
and so it's down that's there fine. In the mud. It's down
well, it was so it, like it stayed attached at the toe, but like the whole from the heel to like the ball of your foot is just basically. So now I've got like a flip flop basically.
Okay,
on the bottom.
So was water getting in?
No.
Okay,
no so water. Nothing in the boot, but just still rip the sole off of it. Yep. So now I'm sitting here like basically wearing a glorified sock. Annoying, but whatever. We keep fishing. We have a great morning. We break for lunch. Meet up with the rest of the group. We go back. The first cast into this hole. My man Greg throws it in there, kind of just on the inside of this current seam there. I'm like, all right, give it a little mend. Actually, you know what? Just leave it. that'll be fine. It's going to drift in there just fine. We'll pick it up. We'll get it further in there on the next cast. As I say, just leave it. His indicator goes down. He sets the hook. He sets the hook into a legitimate 20-inch brown, like an absolute freak show of a fish for our driftless streams.
And is that in Iowa or Wisconsin?
Wisconsin.
Okay.
And so this fish is fighting back and forth and, you know, kind of, he's not really running anywhere, but, you know, he almost, it was like I could consciously see him run left, run right, and then kind of start holding in the current. And it was like he leaned his face back just to like test and make sure that like, mm-hmm. okay, I am for sure hooked by this thing, right? But he kind of did two little soft head shakes and then he just dipped his nose and dove to the bottom of this pool and then bink,
oh boy,
line comes shooting back at us and we lost that fish. So I'm sick to my stomach. I want to throw up at this point. And
quick question.
Yep.
Once a fish has been hooked like that, they fight, mm-hmm. they get let go. Do they bite again?
No. Okay. Not right away. I mean, he'll eat that night, but not, it's going to take some time for him to settle back down after that. And so, we lose that fish and, you know, whatever, off that goes. And then I get in the car to head home and I realize I still hear this little hissing sound as I get back. I'm like, what on earth? And I realize, as I hop in the car, the sun's been beating on it all day, that the hissing sound was the dying last breath of the AC compressor on my Jeep. So I go to fire up the AC, cool myself off a little bit for the drive home, and realize AC's out in that truck. So it was an awesome day. Now, we did catch like 30 fish and just like had an absolutely phenomenal day on the fishing front.
That's got to outweigh all the other shit, though.
Oh, it did.
When you're ripping lips, dude.
Yeah,
you can you know how like in order for your day to actually be bad at that point, and this is just my opinion, if you go out and you're catching a ton of fish, whether, you know, insert whatever fish you're trying to catch, like my truck would have to be totaled in order for me to go, oh, what a shit day. But when you're ripping lips, dude, that's you can get away with a lot at that point.
Yep. You know, it was funny because those guys developed a little bit of a bourbon allergy from the evening before. And that was exactly what they were saying. Was like, you know, you can't feel hungover when you're fighting a fish.
Exactly.
But as soon as you stop and you're standing there and you're tying a knot, it's like, oh, my God, this sucks. Head hurts a little bit. Like,
how'd that happen? That's funny. I mean, well, that's good, man. You caught some fish. Now, my question is, how much does an air conditioner or an AC compressor cost for what year's your Jeep?
2015.
Okay, 2015 Jeep.
So according, I just did a very, very brief search when I got home that evening because I was busy with other stuff and had to get ready for the next day. Yeah. But we're looking at anywhere between $175 and $500. Now, that's just for the compressor. It's not ideal. Is there more that's damaged in there, but that I don't know about beyond the AC? Mm-hmm. Maybe. I don't know. At this point, though, this thing has... I wanted to get her to 300,000 miles, and I thought I was going to, but at this point, I'm starting to wonder if we're going to run out of life there. Yep.
Dude, I'll tell you this, we'll man. See. There's nothing worse than like a vehicle running fine, and then all of a sudden something happening to it, whether it's your fault or not your fault. I can remember several vehicles ago, I went in to get a U-joint replaced because there was some vibration in the driving. And so I was like, okay, I've had this before, U-joint, they replace it. U-joints usually aren't too expensive, pop it in and go. But they're like, it's the U-joint, but there's all this other shit. It's like $2,000. That's going to cost. And, you know, this was several years ago and I was like, what a kick in the dick. It's just like everything runs fine. And then all of a sudden something little turns to something major. And I was just and so, you know, especially with the way the world is today with how much everything costs, I'm just like, I just know something bad's going to happen to one of the vehicles here pretty soon. And it's going to just like derail my life. Yep. Right. It's just going to be like, oh, that's going to be $8,000 to get that fixed. And I'm just like, I don't have $8,000 to put into a vehicle right now and maintain what I'm maintaining. And yep. So it would be, dude, it would suck to have some big expense, you know, to fix a vehicle, and yeah. things like that. So
Yep. I will say though, if you're somebody out there looking for a good rig, the 2015 Jeep Grand Cherokee was an absolute workhorse for me. So shout out to them.
Yeah. Good vehicle.
Best snow vehicle I've ever had.
Yeah.
Thing ripped. Just dude, crawls. It's dude, awesome.
This is crazy. I had, my first truck I ever owned. First truck I ever owned was a 2001 GMC Sonoma quad cab, mm-hmm. you know, backseat. You really couldn't put people in it. It was, yep. it was small, like the kids were fine in it. And then it had a short bed. And dude, I'm telling you what, I could go anywhere in that vehicle and not worry about getting stuck when I put it in four-wheel drive. Dude, it was ridiculous.
Yep.
And it's not like those types of vehicle, those types of trucks really aren't supposed to be quote unquote off road, but mm-hmm. it did, man. I put it in some iffy situations and it got out of it every single time. And it was crazy.
Were you like sandbags in the bed kind of guy or
no,
like,
because it was a four wheel drive. Okay, so I didn't necessarily need it. My ass weighed it down is what was going on.
Dude, those little small body trucks back then, like the early 2000s ones, were absolute tanks.
Yeah.
I feel like the ones you see now, they're, I don't know, they've gotten soft. It's like they're trying to
conserve money.
The gap and yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Dude, my high school truck was an 07 Dodge Dakota and that thing just banged. Oh, it was the best, man.
Dude, my first truck my first vehicle was my dad should have never, the state of Iowa, my parents should have had a conversation. They should have never let me have a vehicle at 16. Mm-hmm. The first day I went out and got this car, and my first vehicle ever was a 1987 Buick Cutlass, Buick Supreme or something like that. It was like Buick's version of like not their most luxury vehicle, but the second step down, four door, four cylinder, just like, anyway, long story short, I get this. My dad bought a new, he bought a Chevy Blazer. And so I got that front wheel drive the first day I got it, dude. Just went out to the back blacktop north of town and just tried to go as fast as I could with that truck or with that. And then just everywhere I went, like, so my buddy, he had like a 1984 Mustang mm-hmm. that his stepbrother helped him rebuild. And so he could chirp like, you know, like,
yeah.
And so in order for me to like keep up with that, I had to throw it in reverse, go backwards real fast, slam it into drive. And then I could spin my tires because I didn't have any power. So I had to use momentum on my side. Dude, I just beat the shit out of that. And so, you know, like a year later, I'm driving down the blacktop and the motor just shuts off. And I'm going like 87 miles an hour. The motor just shuts off and I'm north of town or I'm west of town on this blacktop. And I call my dad, like I had to, back then no one had cell phones. So I had to walk to a farmhouse, call my dad. My dad's like, I'm like, can you come get me? Something's wrong with the vehicle. He gets there and nothing's just like, it's dead. It just said, I'm done working. Mm-hmm. Like the radio and stuff would turn on. He's like, what happened to it? I'm like, I don't know. I was just driving down the road and all of a sudden it just shut off. And he's like, oh, okay, well, that's weird. You know, usually things don't do that. And, then we take it to he's like, yeah, there's like two seized, you know what I'm doing when I'm doing this?
Gears, yeah.
Pistons. He's like, God. there's two seized pistons, and it doesn't look like there's been any oil put in it for a while or shit like that. And he's like, the lights should be on and things like that. I'm like, yeah, dude, it just was like working fine. And meanwhile, the last 12 months has just been me beating the shit out of this vehicle.
Yep.
And long story short, that's when I learned I had to maybe treat things with a little bit more respect than just, it's not a play. Vehicles are not play toys is what I'm getting at.
But, dude, you think at that age, you think you're so clever. You're like, I don't know what happened. It was super weird. You know, I didn't do anything out of the, I was going 65 on the highway.
Yeah, I was going 50. Normal. Yeah. Then I never really got it above, you know, 50, you know, right. I never really got it above 50. Meanwhile, I'm just like everywhere I go, my foot was just to the floor. Everywhere I went, you know, and but by the way, Buick Centuries don't sound like that. They don't go, they just go. And then after a while, when the muffler gets ripped off or, you know, shit, then they start sounding rough. But anyway, that's neither here nor there, my friend.
Straight pipe the Buick. Yeah. It's
holy shit. And dude, the funny one. Oh, go ahead. Nope. No. Go.
I was going to say, one of the things though about like that era of vehicle, especially like those old Buicks, dude, mm-hmm. I had buddies in high school that had those. Mm-hmm. They were the most comfortable cars to sit in. Dude, it was like you were sitting on your couch or sitting in a recliner or in a recept, those things. Like, I wish we would bring that back with modern vehicles.
My next vehicle was a Cutlass Supreme. And so, again, they made a mistake by giving me a rear wheel drive V8. And a huge back seat. So, dude, everywhere I went, there was like 10 people in my car, right? I mean, and the it had the folding console down, but you could pull it back up and you could fit two additional people. So it was like four in the front, six in the back. And we were just like, we're just lucky. This sounds bad, but we're just lucky we didn't end up a statistic. You know what I mean? Like 10 people died because someone was trying to jump a railroad track, you know, like, dude, it was so stupid. We were so stupid.
Local teenagers died jumping the tracks in the Buick's Cutlass Supreme.
It was gnarly, dude. Anyway, I got some things I want to talk about, not necessarily deer related. This might end up turning into a BS session, but huge shout out to the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles. It is very important that we say thank you to these companies because honestly, let's not kid ourselves. They write the check for me to talk about their products. And that's what allows me to live my lifestyle. It allows me to continue to do what I do and make the Nine Finger Chronicles and the other podcasts that these partners are a part of free. So a huge shout out to Wasp Archery. If you're looking for a badass broadhead for this upcoming season, whether you're looking at a fixed or a mechanical, and they have everything for every species, whether you're going to hunt moose or you're going to hunt whitetails, go check out wasparchery.com. Discount code NFC20. Next on the list, we have Vortex Optics. I mean, we're looking at what, about a week of Iowa. I know Iowa, but Wisconsin goes deeper into May, even into June. Is Wisconsin a June year this year where they go into June or not?
I don't think so. No,
not this year. Okay.
Yeah. It ends on a weird day.
But anyway, what I'm getting at is there's still time. If you haven't hunted yet, go out, do some turkey hunting and go and put a red dot on your, a Vortex red dot on your turkey shotgun. It just makes things a little easier. So vortexoptics.com. Next on the list is Code Blue Scents, real and synthetic deer urine, scent elimination products. My favorite, the Rope-A-Dope Mock Scrape Kit, which and probably in about June, I'm going to be heading out to the farms, dumping mineral, freshening up my mock scrapes and getting some of that stuff put together for the upcoming season. And then Reveal trail cameras. I actually, if you want to hear a really good podcast episode, go check out the latest episode of the How to Hunt. Hunting Gear Podcast. That's it. The Hunting Gear Podcast, where I talked with Greg from Reveal about the Habitat IQ app that they've just released and the, you know, some of the new stuff, new technology coming down the pipe and the upgrades to the app for Reveal. So go check out tacticam.com/cameras. You can download the app anywhere apps are downloaded. So, and then lastly, my company, fullsneakgear.com. Go check it out. All right. I want to talk a little bit of, like, right now. I know this is a spring session, and we've been talking a little bit about strategy and things, but I have a milestone today that I want to talk about. We're recording this on Monday, May 11th, and today marks one full year I've been alcohol free.
No kidding.
1 year, no alcohol.
Hell yeah.
I can't say 100% sober because I've done some THC, not a ton, like I'd say maybe like 4 or 5 times throughout the last 12 months, but still I've had some THC. So I'm not 100% sober for 1 year, but I am alcohol free for 1 year. Now, I don't know if I necessarily want to get into all of the ins and outs of all of that, but here's what I will say. I needed it. And I think it's very important I did this together with my wife. So I'm extremely proud of her for sticking with it for as long as she's done it. For that 1 year, and I'm proud of myself for sticking it out. But I'll be completely honest. I think the biggest beneficiary of me and my wife not drinking has been my kids. And so when you get into a routine where it's 5 o'clock or, hey, I just mowed the yard and your attention shifts to alcohol. Well, you're shifting away from something else. And what I was doing is I was shifting my attention away from my kids. And so like for me, when my kids would be like, hey, dad, take me on a bike ride or let's go play catch or let's go to the park, I would have been drinking. And then I would say, dude, I'm tired. I don't want to do it. And it became more like me drinking that beer in some subconscious way became more important than my kids. Right. And so since I've done that, I don't say that anymore. I don't get tired from drinking the alcohol, and it's better for my body. It's better for my sleep. I feel like I'm healthier. I'm more active. And, I don't know if this knee replacement would go as well as it's going if I was also drinking. So,
dude, definitely not.
Yeah. And so I'm just kind of, I'm happy with that decision that I've made. I will say this though. Moderation is an excellent thing, in all parts of life. I just don't think I had the grip on moderation. And so my one beer every night turned into 1, 2, 3, 4 beers, and then maybe a glass of bourbon or something like that. And so I made the decision with my wife to give it a year and see what happens. But I, not necessarily making the promise to be sober or to quit drinking altogether after the year, but I've gotten this far and now it's almost like, dude, look what you've done without it. And so I don't necessarily think that I'm going to ever go back to that part of it just because of how I feel and the impact it has on my children. So, that's really all I wanted to say about that part of my life. Right.
Yeah. That's so awesome.
Yeah. But
one thing I'll add to that too is like, I mean, I'm sure you felt it quickly too. Like, even after like the first month or first couple of weeks, like no booze and stuff, like you start to feel lighter and it's like you almost get some momentum going.
100%.
You got a year under your belt now. It's like, why would I want to throw a wrench into this momentum? And like, even if it doesn't do anything, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm of the mindset of like, when I get on a streak like that and then I break it, I'm like, oh, you son of a bitch. Like, come on.
Yeah.
And yeah. No, dude, that's awesome.
Yeah. And so for me, that's important. And I think for my kids, that's important. And really what that's done, and this is where I kind of want to shift into like a different direction. It's made me think a lot about what actually makes me happy in life. Okay.
Totally.
Like the people, the experiences, what I do for a living, like what actually makes me happy. And I kind of want to put you on the spot, Pierce. And I want to ask you the question, and you can be as detailed or as vague as you want, but what makes you happy, dude?
Man, that's a big old question.
That's a big question. That's a big one. And I'm sorry I'm putting you on the spot. And I think you were probably coming here thinking you were going to talk about whitetails and strategy and mm-hmm. summer and things like that. But I'm throwing curveballs today, baby.
Sure. No, I like that, dude. Yeah. I think, and this is spinning off of a conversation my girlfriend and I had this morning mm-hmm. as we were drinking our coffee and whatnot, kind of along the lines of, what's the best way to say this here? Being able to share things with others and see them succeed has been really, really, really fulfilling for me lately. Yeah. Like, especially with just the guiding this year, like this is year five of, you know, my independent guide business and everything. And I feel like every year I've kind of like worked out a few more kinks and, you know, streamlined a few things and all that. But
yeah,
you reach the point where, especially early on, you kind of have that imposter syndrome and it's like, oh my God, the pressure's on like so much right off the bat here. And like, if we don't catch like a bunch of fish and all that sort of, we don't, you know, you build up all these expectations in your head ahead of time. And then you like, almost get you the self sabotage, you shoot yourself in the foot because you're second guessing everything. And I think I've reached a point with things so far where it's streamlined and, you know, everything's just really, really dialed. And I can really lean in hard to the personal, like sort of like the education and like the like how do we make today as awesome for you as we possibly can? And like seeing folks light up and seeing folks understand the like why, and when they get really interested and engaged and like, okay, like why are we doing this? And like, I never would have thought about that. And you know, seeing the, you know, little fish come out from behind a rock. So like anytime I think to zoom out from that, you know, being able to share knowledge and see other people benefit from it and like see other people succeed and like for things to work out for them, like that these days is making me really, really happy. Dude, just to see other people crushing it.
Dude, that's awesome. And, you know, a lot of people, they don't look at guide services that way, right? They look at it as like, oh God, you're just paying more money to get a bigger buck or whatever the case is. But I can definitely see that, dude. And I'll even compare it a little bit to coaching, right? And so like this this weekend, my boy, my youngest boy had a baseball tournament, right? And these kids, dude, they're not good at baseball right now. They're 8 years old, right? And sometimes there's these expectations that are put on them, maybe by another coach or maybe by a parent, that are just really unrealistic for 8 year olds. But I got to see, like, I'm a dugout dad right now because of the knee. And so I'm not coaching a base. So I get to see the entire circle of sports in the dugout, right? When you strike out and they come in crying and they're upset, or maybe they dropped a ball and they're upset. But I also get, and that's a huge coaching moment for them, right? And so maybe a kid let a grounder go through his legs. And then I come, I'm like, all right, dude, what are we doing? Maybe next time we put the glove down, put the palm out, and the ball comes right into the glove and we trap it with our other hand. We know we practice the two hands. You get on your surfboard and you throw it to first, right? And then they go and do that. And then they look at me and they're smiling and they're like, yeah, we did it. And then it's like, dude, those moments right there where you can see a kid just love a sport or have this big ass smile, where all the hard work that sucked, right? Like, for example, my daughter back in March when she won the state championship for wrestling, like, it's straight-faced. Wrestling is a brutal sport to get good at. And she started to see all of her, like, everything was clicking for her at the state tournament. And there was no talk about, you know, like, you got this, you're going to be first place. She just went in and took the action. And then when she pinned that girl, got her on her back and pinned her, that initial standing up and being able to see the smile on her face for all the hard work, dude, those are moments that like, it's just pure joy for that person. And because I was part of it, I get to share a little bit of that as well. And so that type of stuff really makes me happy, dude.
Dude, absolutely. Yeah. Like, on the coaching front and all that, like, you see stuff click and you see those little moments of like, I screwed that up. And then everything goes. Or like in the case of your daughter, like you've been watching her, I'm sure, just work her butt off for, you know, the last handful of years, and for that to all come to fruition and pay off, like in that moment, like,
right,
dude, it's the best.
Here's something.
Watching the homies kill it doesn't get any better than that.
Especially if they're part of your crew, dude. Like, whether that's family or like bros you came up with. Like, I'll be honest, man. I don't have a ton of quote unquote hunting friends, but I do have a small group that, you know, we keep in touch every year. And when they send me their trophy picks, I'm just fucking jacked for them, dude. Yep. I'm just like, it didn't used to be like that. There was part of me that was always like, I got to go do something bigger now. I got to get something bigger. And now I don't even give a shit, right? I'm just out to like enjoy all this stuff. But kind of wanted to finish up a thought here. And that was like, I had a moment last night, and I don't know. It was crazy, because in life, there's so much noise. Like, there's so much pressure put on us, whether it's about money or achieving a goal or work or, you know, trying to be the best version of this label that's given to us. And last night, my two boys were playing wiffle ball off the back deck. My daughter was sitting talking with me. My wife was sitting across talking with us. There's like a three-way conversation there. And I had this moment where there was no noise. It was just a conversation between your family. And my wife was talking, you know, there didn't seem to be any stress in her life that was really anything. My daughter was sitting there just like completely relaxed. I was completely relaxed. Like, birds were chirping. The sun was, it's like this environment. And I had this moment where I was just like, dude, this could be what heaven's like. You know what I mean? Like, this is one of those moments where I just had almost like a moment of zen. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, dude, I am so happy I have these people in my life right now. And it kind of hit me, dude. And I was just, when you have those types of moments, you kind of realize like what is actually important in this world. It's not about, like, for me, it's not necessarily about the vehicle that you drive, how much money you make, how good your kid is at sports. It's not even about sports. It's just about like the people, right? And you have these moments, and I brought this up, and I, you know, you see the memes and the reels online where it's just like, dude, I don't know about you. I don't know how old are you?
I'm going to be 30.
Oh, so you're 29 right now?
Yeah.
Holy shit, dude.
Yeah.
You're a pup.
For now.
For now. Damn.
I don't know, dude. We were talking last night and I was like, I'm almost at a point where I've been driving for more of my life than I haven't been. And that's a weird, like.
Yeah. Well, when I was alcohol, I started drinking when I was 14 years old. Believe that. And so this 1 year sobriety was the longest that I have taken off alcohol since I was 14 years old. Believe that.
No kidding.
Yeah. So that's crazy. That's a crazy statistic right there. Okay. So anyway, like, I had that moment and it just made me realize, like, dude, people spend so much energy worrying about things that just ultimately do not matter in life. And they put all this potential to the side. Like, as far as happiness and what actually makes you happy, it's less like, dude, I want to live in those moments as much as humanly possible, moving forward, because I am 45 years old. And I don't know if you probably haven't realized this yet, but if you're going to take any advice from this old man, I would say this, like, try to live in those moments as much as possible. Especially when maybe you get married, maybe you have kids, those types of things, like, that shit is important. And I don't, like, everybody gets so worried about the almost like the possession part of life, or how other people perceive you to look or be, that in 40 years, I'll be 85 years old to 90 years old, dude, the likelihood of me hitting 90 is probably rare. Like it probably won't happen, but if it does, awesome. I'm halfway done with my life. So you think the color of my truck matters, or how much money I make matters? Like, my goal right now is to provide, and I don't want to say like my kids with the best life. And that doesn't mean like vacations. It doesn't mean like buying them things, because like we definitely spend too much money on them. But what I'm trying to get at is like, I'll be dead. People will start to forget about me. So I want to leave the biggest impact as I possibly can on my kids and on the things that I appreciate, like the outdoors, right? And so That's my goal moving forward, is just to live in these moments where I can be the best father, the best husband, and not be influenced by anything outside of that. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code NFC at checkout for 20% off on all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
Yeah. So absolutely. So, dude, and I knew exactly where you're going as soon as you started talking about like the amount of noise and everything, and like trying to find a moment where it's like somebody all it's of a clear. Sudden, like snaps your fingers, like poof. And it's like, there's a vacuum. It's like all the extracurricular shit is just like, shoop. Yeah. It's like, whoa. And I don't know if it's always been that way that folks have had those kind of moments of like, you know, I don't know how to describe it, but it's like, it almost feels like somebody like suddenly you like zoomed in or you zoomed out, and it's like, now there's no more chatter in the background. You're just there, but then you become conscious of it and you're like, oh
yeah,
this is awesome.
I wonder if I'd like to talk with someone in their 80s or man and woman, because I think it would be a unique perspective to have conversations like this with men and women. At what point in their life did they realize that they potentially wasted a lot of their life caring about shit that just does not matter? Right. And what a conversation with a potential like a 29-year-old or 30, like what kind of impact that would have on someone like you or myself, right? Or even younger. Right. It's like, dude, I woke up one day and I realized that I had been giving my life to something that just did not matter, like 20, 30 years of your life. And that's a little bit how I felt with alcohol, where I was just like, dude, I was giving priority to something that had that gave my life no value. And so I wonder if there's like, I don't know. I'll use women for example, and maybe this is unfair to say, but like, women tend to put a lot of pressure on themselves for how they look or what kind of clothes they wear or how their house looks and things like that. And I understand, you know, you want to look nice and have that shit, but if you obsess about it, or I know men that do the same thing. Like I met this guy one time a long time ago about like he had a watch, and I had a conversation with him about like, he was like literally trying to show the watch off. He was just playing with it until the point where I just asked him about it. And he felt like that was what defined him, was that watch. Yep. And in my head, I'm like, you are a douchebag, dude. Yep. Nobody gives a fuck about your watch, right? Great. You have a watch. Who gives a shit, right? Does that make you a good person? No, it doesn't. You're a douche, right? And so I don't know really where I'm going with all that, except like, my goal in life, the remainder of my life, is to live in a state of appreciation, a state of happiness, and a state of like trying to live. This is going to, I don't know, you take what you want to take out of this, or the listener to take what they want to take, but like living in a world of like, what would Jesus do type of sure. thing like that. And I'm really just trying to focus on it, like my kids, my wife, and my faith. And really that's the goal from here on out.
Absolutely.
Oh, by the way, also going after big antlered deer, like shooting, and it's not even big antlered deer, but just like trying to bow hunt and kill shit like that. Like, dude, like, you want to talk about what makes me happy? Going out and sitting in a tree stand and watching, climbing up the ladder, the stand, completely dark, sun's coming up, and you start to see deer movement. And then you hear, rah, rah, you hear some trotting, giant shows up, you put an arrow through his lungs. That jacks me up so much as well. Mm-hmm. So like, I want to live in that moment as much as I can, if I possibly can, you know what I mean? And involve my kids and others in those moments as well. So that makes me happy. Yep.
Faith, family, freezer filling.
That's yeah, that's dude, that's about. A t-shirt, that's, dude.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the
faith,
new full
family, fill the freezer. I love that, dude. I love that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, like, you know, I've thought about that a lot. And a lot of times I'll ask folks, you know, in the middle of a day, I'll like, ask them some sort of like, a, you know, more like a life question, you know, like, how'd you propose to your wife? How'd you, you know, what's the most fulfilling thing, you know, about your family? Just try and like learn stuff about them.
Yeah.
And, you know, ask those questions and all that. And, you know, there's, and I'm curious on your take about this, because you mentioned wanting to ask like some 80-year-olds who, you know, what are the things that you wish you just kind of skipped over? Mm-hmm. Do you, I guess, how much weight do you think there is like in the part of life where you have to, there are lessons you have to learn yourself, and there's like, you, it's not going to sink in if somebody else tells you, oh, you got to do this and you got to do that from a skill standpoint or like a development or tactical thing. But like, I think there's a lot of things. It was like the defining turning points in the road of life that, you know what? I'm going to put my foot down and I'm done with this. I've had enough of it. And you have to learn those lessons the hard way.
Oh,
and
dude, I would not be in the position that I'm in right now if I didn't walk some really hard fucking roads throughout my life. Whether that be my parents getting divorced and then my mom getting divorced again from this fucking loser. And so like walking that road and then that leading to my current stepdad, who's been, you know, 20 years now, you know, whatever. And like just going through, that process in life. Also like, the alcoholism that I went through, and not just necessarily alcoholism. It was really the lifestyle, right? And living a hard lifestyle where you're like probably treating women with disrespect. And treating myself with disrespect and being really far away from God and the types of decision that he would warrant to, you know, it's like, dude, you're not in a good spot right now. But ultimately all of that led me to this point right here where I have a really good life and I have everybody I need in my four closest people, my wife and my kids and my dad and my mom, you know, molding me the way they molded me. And then I wasn't dry yet. Right. I wasn't like, I was wet concrete up until about 33 or something like that. And then I started to form into who I was going to be. And I wish I could go back and tell myself, dude, you're going to waste 11 years of your life, 12 years of your life being an alcoholic. Maybe don't do that. But I don't think that I would have listened to that version of myself. I would have called, dude, stop being a pussy. Let's go drink.
Yeah.
Type of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's the same with, you have to learn the hard way, because if you take the easy way out every time, or you read a book by some guy who's like, dude, how to live the best life, and I'm going to read this book and I'm going to follow these instructions. Well, that's great, but you've never felt adversity.
Yep.
And when you don't know what adversity feels like, you don't know what it's like to crawl and claw and dig your way out of a bad situation, man. It's like, for example, have you ever had a gun pulled on you before?
I have not, no.
Okay. It's scary as shit, dude. And
I believe it.
Like, I've had it done two times my entire life. Well, three times. Two times is when I was actually knocking on doors to get permission for a farm, right? The other time was I was standing outside of a bar and some guy pulls up and he takes a gun out of the car, swipes it across a crowd of people, and then puts it down on the side of his car, right? And I was like, my butthole just went thoop. Like, I thought this dude was going to just open up and start spraying people. Yep. Anyway, you have those moments, and then you put yourself in high pressure situations enough that you start to know how to deal with some of those high pressure situations. And the ultimate metaphor, especially for this podcast, is hunting, right? You can run trail cameras. You can sell cams. You can plant food plots. You can have the box blinds. You can have the manicured shit, right? But the second that giant steps out and you have all the easy buttons, right, for yourself, there's no easy button for controlling your emotions.
Yep.
Right? And so you draw that bow back or you put that scope up and your heart is beating out of your chest because everything you've done up until this point is for that thing that's standing out there. And that is why from 2006 till 2016, I made so many mistakes, even as, you know, as far away as 100 yards to as close as 10 yards from my stands at full draw, trying to control myself or put myself in a position. You don't know what it's like until you've been there.
Yep.
Right? And that's why some of these guys, let's say, for example, like Andy May, that guy is such a deal closer when it comes to bucks because he's been close to big bucks. And you can't, like, I can remember I was like passing all of these deer up until 2016 that I was like, I got them close, but I want the big one.
Yeah.
Well, the big one shows up, I shit my pants and he gets away. Right. And so you got to have those encounters in life in order to come out successful. When you take that metaphor, however you want to take it.
Yeah. Well, it's like conditioning, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you're literally conditioning yourself as a hunter. Like the more shots you take, the more time you take to put yourself in those scenarios.
Yeah.
Same with life. Like the more adversity you're willing to put yourself in, mm-hmm. like the more character you're going to develop, the better resiliency you're going to have, the mm-hmm. more, I mean, you touched on there, like just emotional regulation and like not losing your mind when something goes wrong. Like, dude, the only way to hone that in, and I think these days the quick pitch is like, oh, well, you need to practice mindfulness and meditation and like all that stuff. And that's good stuff. Like that, I'm not ripping on that.
Yeah.
But dude, there's some things that you just got to learn through the fire.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
It's you pay to play. And, you know, nothing good comes without a sacrifice, whether it's eating shit for a few years mm-hmm. while you get a business off the ground or missing a bunch of deer while you try and, you know, get closer or whatever it may be. But
it's
free.
Yeah. It's weird, man. It's, it's crazy how, I don't know. It's just crazy how, like, for me, life is just, it's busy, but it just slows down. Right. Mm-hmm. Have you ever met or do you know guys who just, when shit goes wrong, they fall? I mean, it doesn't have to be a guy. It can be a girl too. Like when shit goes wrong, they fall apart and then things get worse for them because they're unable to, not live in that high pressure situation.
Dude, I used to be that guy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're talking the last 5 years or so trying to figure this out. And, you know, I finished school and, you know, had these, you know, been working on this business for a number of years and had this plan of like, well, here's the next steps, and didn't realize how much extra work was going to have to go into it in between.
Yeah.
And then long lead times and, you know, waiting on responses and all that stuff. And I'm going to go full in on this business. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you're trying to make a full-time gig out of a business that's in its like literally like embryonic stage and like it's not a full-time thing yet and just climbing the walls wondering what the hell I'm doing wrong and all that sort of stuff. And then things would go wrong and it was like, well, I'm trying to get something developed here and now here's this setback, like, holy shit, I already had nothing. No, I'm like, it's like, I felt like I was going like into debt more.
Yeah.
Like I was going into like, I don't know, like life debt almost. Like I was screwing things up so badly that like, now I'll never be able to get out of it. And dude, I would implode and just beat myself up and like always internal, like yeah. always like self-directed. But yeah, dude, I mean, and until you get through that kind of stuff and you realize like, hey, buddy, it's okay. You fucked up. So much other stuff over the last couple of years. One more is not going to matter. Let's just figure out how we solve the problem rather than dwelling on this. And
yeah,
that was kind of why I asked like the things that you got to learn.
Oh, dude, you have
through,
to.
Through the fire, you know, and
business is the hardest thing to have to learn because for example, recently a company approached me and this company was like, hey, I'd like you to move your podcast over to our platform. And we feel that we're going to be able to generate equal amount of revenue or more for you. And I was like, and so I learned from the last time I did that, I drug my feet and I missed out on massive amounts of revenue for the network, you know, the Sportsman's Empire. Mm-hmm. And so this time I listened to this guy and I asked a ton of questions, like 3 months worth of questions. And the guy was doing, you know, he's talking me through this. And I was listening on the platform and things like that. Now it doesn't affect anything except the revenue that I make. Like the podcasts are still going out. People are still listening to them. The downloads are still there, but how I make my money with dynamic ad insertions, and you know, maybe this is over a lot of people's heads, but the second I switched, that got chopped in half. And so now I like financially, especially in this world, like I'm losing 12 grand this year, probably the next 12 months from this happening. And so now you have to have these conversations was like, you know, you got to have these really tough conversations with people. It's like, hey, listen, you told me this. And I know in life, nothing is guaranteed because I've gone through this shit before. You told me this and now it's not coming true. It's not happening like you told me. And now actually I'm finding out there's a whole bunch of an additional steps that I have to do to make what you told me come true. Right. And so it's just really kind of a kick in the dick when you're relying on other people to help you with that. And that's a lesson learned, right? Like,
yeah,
I'm here now. I can't go back in time. I can't talk to myself. I'm here now. And so I got to deal with what's here and I got to try to find new ways to maneuver the business or my personal life or whatever it is when you hit those big road bumps in life. And so it's just, I don't know. It's a lesson learned, dude. And, and I have to just keep communicating and keep finding ways to get better at me and my business and things like that. And like, the other one is the other day, dude, with this knee that I've had, man, there's days where my knee still hurts. And 2 weeks ago, there was a day where my knee just was throbbing and I was on I was on medication on painkillers and I was just tired and I wasn't sleeping at all. And my kids, were being kids, dude. They were just being kids. And I barked at my oldest son and I barked loud enough at him to where I saw him like change. Like it wasn't just a knock it off, get out of here. I yelled at him and I looked at his face like, man, like, I'm just like, you know what I mean? Maybe you've done that where you've come down hard on somebody and then you instantly regret it because it's just like, dude, that's not who I am. Why did I do that? And I instantly regretted it. And so I had to pull him in. And I'm just like, dude, I am so sorry that I yelled at you like that. I shouldn't have, you know, the reason I yelled at you was this, but the reason I got really mad is because my knee hurts and because I'm on pain pills and because I haven't slept in, you know, 5 weeks. And so that kind of stuff, just again, a lesson learned that I had to come out of, admit wrong, and go back to, you know, trying to be a better version of myself, if any of that makes sense.
Yeah. No, yeah. Definitely, dude. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, it's those conversations are tough.
Yeah.
And it's, as the young pup that I am, yeah. I, in you know, just relationships and stuff like that, like my girlfriend and I, we've been together for 5 years now. And
I'm gonna bring that up, dude. So you can lead into it if you want. 5 years.
All right.
5 years, dude. She's not around, is she?
No.
Okay. All right. So no. 5 years, dude. Mm-hmm. That's, you're coming up on like a shit or get off the pot moment.
Oh, we're shopping right now.
Oh, we're shopping.
Yeah. Oh, we're shopping. Yeah.
Okay.
Ring shopping.
Oh, ring shopping. Okay.
Not shopping for other options.
Okay. Okay. I thought you were like, yeah, I'm just holding on to this one till I find something better.
After I said it, I was like, hold on. I need to clear that one up. We are ring shopping.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, yeah, no.
So she awesome. Is the one.
Oh, for sure. Oh, for nice, sure, dude. Cause over this, the last 5 years or so that yeah. we've been together, like she has seen every bit of all my just being an idiot and trying to flaws. Figure things out and getting frustrated. Yeah, yep. It's like, exactly. Like if you've got a partner who has been around like through the low points
yeah.
and stuck it out and all that, like, dude, that's a ride or die for sure. Yeah. An absolute ride or die. But dude, it was because I'm a defensive little guy.
Yeah.
And having those conversations where like I'd get defensive about stuff or I'd be stressed about work or I'd be, you know, have an imposter syndrome about, you know, something else or whatever it may be. Dude, and then, you know, get a little snippy or like, you know, get in an argument or something like that. And then to finally like have to come down, because I'm not a quick emotional processor whatsoever, but it would be like, you know, I've gotten better, but.
2 days later, down. You're like, boy, I was an asshole on Tuesday.
Yep, exactly. Hey, you remember when I was just being a dick for no reason and I was like yeah. sniffing at you? Hey, I didn't know that really it was in the moment I couldn't process it because I was stressed about this.
Yeah.
I was just like, but here's what was happening. Yeah. Oh, well, that makes sense. That's a human moment. Like yeah. I can understand you being stressed. Or I can understand yeah. your knee hurting and not having slept for 5 days.
Yeah.
Those are the conversations I think that yeah. bring you a lot closer to those people when it's like, hey, I screwed up. I'm sorry. And I'm going to work on it.
Yeah. Dude, I proposed to my wife after 7 months.
Did you?
Yeah. And we, like, there was a little pressure on me to propose because she was 30 something at the time. Mm-hmm. And so she was putting some pressure on me. It's like, well, you know, usually at this age, you know, or like this stage in the game, people say that they love each other at this page. And like, I wasn't even like thinking clearly at that point, right? Just like,
yep.
Oh, I got a girlfriend and we're dating and we're having fun and all that stuff. And, you know, obviously she's thinking, wait, that's what women do. They think ahead of all that stuff. And I was kind of living in the moment. And after 7 months of there and realizing that she's the one, we got engaged quick and got married quick. And then some of that feeling out process happened after we were already married. And yep. You know what I mean? And so, and then we went right into having kids. Let's say like we got married in April 2012 and we had our first kid set basically 9 months later in April. So let's see, or February. So April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November, December, January, February. So 11 months later, we had a kid. So we went right into the process and maybe we knew each other then, maybe we didn't know each other then, but we had to go through the whole process, like almost like, because I think there's a certain point of any relationship where you just kind of avoid stressful situations, but mm-hmm. you can only avoid those for so long until you guys have to, like, this is the real version of me. This is the real version of you. And are they going to collide, or are they going to, you're going to shake hands? You know what I mean? And so we definitely had to work some of that out. And, you know, even today, we still have to figure some of that shit out.
Yeah. That's a journey, right? Yeah,
it is.
Yeah. Dude, we moved in together after 9 months of dating.
Okay.
And when I, like, we moved in together, she's from the Chicago suburbs. We met 2 months before my lease was up when I was finishing up grad school, living over there. Mm-hmm. Then I moved back to Wisconsin for a while, and then we dated long distance. And then eventually we were like, hey, this is getting tough. Like, she was trying to finish school, all that sort of stuff. And that was when the opportunity opened up. Like, hey, what do you think about moving to rural Iowa? What do you say, huh?
She's like, sold.
And so we did, but didn't really understand, like, hey, this is going to be a massive adjustment. Then, you know, when we have our separate places, or when we were, you know, even in life, we'd hang out for a long weekend or whatever, because I had a pretty flexible schedule.
Yeah.
Whenever we were dating distance. And then, yeah, you move in together and it's like, oh shit, we are in this house together, and we are not leaving this house together, because we both live here. Like, we need to figure this stuff out.
And
dude, it's trial by fire. And as soon as you get through it, it's all right. How'd you propose to your wife?
Okay. So, I did a thing where I got reservations at this restaurant, and I invited my brother and his girlfriend, which is now his wife, her parents and my parents, my mom, stepdad, and my dad and stepmom. And so I said to her, hey, listen, I'm going to go to, let's go out to dinner while we're back in town with my parents. And they're like, she's like, yeah, okay, it's a nice restaurant, let's go. So it was in a different town. But so what I did was I left, and then I took a detour into this state park. It's like a beautiful state park in southern Iowa, which allowed them to leave and then pass me to get to the restaurant. And then what I did was we were at a dock at a state park, and I was like, hey, look over there. Look at that. Look at those flowers or whatever. She turned around, looked at the flowers, and then I opened the ring box. I got down on one knee and I proposed to her. And, you know, she did the whole, you know, she was very happy and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then when we came up the elevator, and I go, I have reservations for Dan Johnson for two, or, you know, whatever, for Dan Johnson. She goes, oh, okay, come this way. So she turned the corner, and then the entire family was there. Everybody was there. And then she had a breakdown. Right.
Yep.
And so, that was how I did it. Have you put any thought in? Well, you can't, because what if this gets back to her? Right. Do you have?
Oh, no, I don't have a solid plan yet.
Well, if you're ring shopping, there's really no surprise, right?
Like, well, I mean, we've discussed it. We're kind of pragmatic in that way, but we've discussed it, because I really wanted to make sure, like, if I'm going to get this ring, like, I really want to make sure that it's one that she wants. Like, just wanted to see, you know, wanted to walk through the case, or like walk by the cases and see which ones she like kind of like lingers on. And looks
gotcha.
And, I kind of like that, you know, just get a little bit of an idea of what to go for there. And so
have you done the math? Like, how many trout do you have to catch to afford the ring?
I have been doing that. Yep. I have been doing that. Yeah. And we're getting there.
Yeah.
Hopefully by the end of the season, we can get something cooking here. But
good deal.
Yeah. In terms of where and when or any of that, it's
just don't get married in November, dude. And then you'll be fine.
Yeah, that's
love
the
it.
Plan. Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, we didn't really accomplish too much today, but we had some really good conversations. Pierce, man, thank you very much for taking time out of your day to BS with me for a little bit. Also, if you guys would do me a huge favor, number one, go check out Pierce's Wisconsin Sportsman podcast. I'd really appreciate that. Also, all of the podcasts on the Sportsman's Empire are just badass, dude. So I'm maybe a little biased, but I really do feel like the network has, other than the Nine Finger Chronicles and other than the Wisconsin Sportsman, what is one of your favorite podcasts on the network other than what I'm doing and what you're doing?
Oh, dude, my man, Nick Otto.
Nick Otto. Underrated Nick Otto.
Dude, so underrated. I still feel bad for shit talking him for saying Benny.
Benny, yeah, yep.
Started, I just rage baited him. Yep. That was my only attempt at rage baiting. And
the Huntivore podcast.
Bit me in the ass. Yeah, check out the Huntivore podcast. Yeah. Nick's the man.
Nick is the man. All right, cool, dude. Go to iTunes, wherever you download your podcast. Like, subscribe, 5-star review. We're also dropping this episode on the Nine Finger Chronicles YouTube channel. So go do that as well. Other than that, man, go out, try to live your best life, be the best version of yourself, good vibes, wear your safety harness, all that shit. And we'll talk to you next week.